everyone. Welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's June. June 1st of 2016. And how are we going to celebrate June? By doing the same thing we always do.
Take over the world.
Yes.
Try to take over the world.
We have tried multiple times. There has been an amount of successes. I will not say whether that success, that amount is positive, negative, zero, whole number, or fraction, but it is a number.
Yes.
We have succeeded a number of times.
Unfortunately, at the end of it, we always still get brought back to the place we began, trapped inside our mouse cage, inside the laboratory, but it's relatively easy for us to escape, even though our hijinks seem to topple over one another in a hilarious experiment. But it's fun. It bonds us together. And then eventually we get a weird spin-off with Almira that nobody remembers, but you hear about and you're like, that sounds awful.
Hmm. Oh, no. Which of us would be the genius and which of us would be insane?
I mean, I pretty much give myself the role of the idiot here.
Should I just, like, you know, prompt you for random things, then, you know, Chris, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
North!
I think so, Nick, but how are we going to possibly do that, man, you know?
Yeah, like, Nick, how are we possibly get enough balloons to fill up the entire orphanage?
That's not what I'm pondering at all.
I don't know why I decided to become British, too. I'm like the British
pinky.
You
just can't do a pinky impression.
Yeah. Narf! Like, I guess that's about all I can do. I can do his one-liner, his catchphrase.
That's all that matters, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how bad a pinky impression you do. If you can effectively do Narf, then you got it made.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to carry myself to superstardom. By the way, normally we do like a wacky tangent at the start of this, but I just wanted to bring something up because it's something that I've really realized. You know, I watch HBO on Sundays, Game of Thrones, everybody enjoys that, and then they have Silicon Valley afterwards, which I just catch. But I always watch now Veep afterwards. I don't know if you ever watched Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who was on Seinfeld. Essentially, right. It's her, like the first couple seasons, she's the Veep, and then spoilers. Around season 4, actually, she becomes the president because the president has a heart attack or something like that.
Yay.
It is legitimately one of the funniest shows on television, though. I cannot praise that show enough. And it has a character that I think may be like my favorite like sitcom-y comedy character of Jonah, who's just this tall, douchey person that everyone hates and insults the first chance they get. And he's now running for congressman in his state, and the campaign ad they have of him is great because it's just him like clearly like failing to chop a piece of wood and then chasing children around thinking it looks playful. It's seriously one of the funniest things in the fucking world. If you ever get the chance to see it, I'm gonna find a YouTube clip so I can send it to the audience. But if you don't watch Veep, you have to because it's seriously one of the funniest things.
Okay. Well. Anyway, with that
plug
out of the way, we got some manga to talk about. It was a big week in manga. Lots and lots of events and cool things happened that we are going to be talking about. We are not yet done with A Silent Voice. That'll probably come next week. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping I'm not dying when next week comes around. It's been like 3 days of like straight sickness for me, so I'm thankfully finally over it, I think. And
I think that if Chris read some chapters of the manga, he would have felt so depressed and sick that he would have just like curled up and gone to sleep after about 3 pages. So
I felt bad because I feel like I accidentally transferred my sickness to Scotia then too, because I woke up and she had threw up all over the floor, and she was really sad. Like, I don't think she felt bad about it, but she knew she couldn't eat for a little bit because of that. So, she's pretty bummed out.
I don't feel bad because of what I did. I feel bad because of the consequences that are going to be placed upon me. That's like how kids react whenever they get caught. They don't feel bad about what they've done. They just know that that no TV is coming.
Yeah. Scotia should recognize that. She's like, I threw up everywhere, Dad, and does this mean I can't have more food this morning? Like,
why is she like an 1800 Southern lady?
That's the voice we've given Scotia. She's like, oh, I love trust my daddies, even though they both do kind of questionable things.
Anyhow. Let's talk about manga. Recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Gonna kick off as we normally do with some Black Clover. With, the bad guys having ruined everything, basically. It's kind of weird because we open up, like, on the beach, I guess, above the water temple, with Sek having managed to avoid getting destroyed along with all the wizard knights that are apparently on the battlefield behind him. So presumably the beast magic guy who is currently invading the water temple, he and his goons actually encountered, I don't know, 5 squads of magic knights just on the beach.
We knew that Sect was there from when they were having, like, the wacky fan service chapter.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this is, I guess, that we've now determined Sect's just going to be the Zongay of this series. Like,
right, right.
The loser dude who just happens to always be around there when things are happening.
He is pretty much Zongay.
Yeah, just Zongay actually had slight... Zongay was, like, in that situation where he at least thought he was hot shit for a while. This dude, I feel like, always shows up and he's like, oh no, these dudes are tough. I'm just gonna hang out over here, try to pick up these chicks.
But yeah, he's all terrified because all the magic knights have been taken out. He says that 50 of them. Yeah.
Did he? Wow.
Yeah. All of them apparently attacked him first, and then he just shrugged up and killed them all.
Yeah, he activated gorilla magic, or whatever the fuck beast magic does.
Right. So, Luck and Magna are still there, having first come across him, but the most powerful of the priests there, they say his name at some point. He says his name multiple times, but I guess...
Shark Dude!
Shark Dude! Guy who was wearing the Hammerhead Shark mask. He manages to shrug off the initial attack that was laid down on him, and he stands up, and he basically looks like Kyoto, but with weird facial hair.
I can't describe what this sort of facial hair is.
Well, it's a goatee and it's mutton chops.
But it's not exactly mutton chops, because it doesn't seem like there's connecting hair from, like, here to here. It's like he just has...
The sideburns connect.
It does, but it's not as full or as jutting. Like it's jutting out here, and then here's just like regular connecting. So it's like a 3-point beard, I guess.
It basically is that, but I mean, it is mutton chops and a goatee, I guess, because there is hair connecting all the way down the jawline. So presumably he's been grooming along here and along here, but not at the, you know, edges of the jaw.
Like, it's because you see him from the side too, so it's not even like it's like a big patch here. It like clearly like covers like up to almost his chin back that he just lets grow out into like fine points, but then the rest of it he's just like, yeah, I'll shave that.
Whatever.
I'm like, this is a lot of work for something you have to know looks dumb as shit. You have to know this is a bad fashion decision.
Okay. So, Beast Magic Guy sends his followers out and they scatter across the temple while he stays behind to fight the Water Priest. And there is a cool moment because he's just like, alright, I'm going to take you on. Storms this giant fucking hammer, smashes it into Beast Magic Guy, but he just conjures armor and completely shrugs it off. No problem. He retaliates by charging in really quickly, slashing him with an attack, and just keeps on going and also takes out Luck and Magna with it as well. And so he goes on several times because apparently, because he is the second guy this week, actually, whose big thing is despair. I want you all to experience despair. Because, I mean, obviously the other one is, you know, Akasha and Toriko.
Oh, I was going to say Bradman in Fairy Tale does the same
thing as
well.
Yeah, good point. Lots of people are talking about despair. A lot of people are into feeling bad.
And in a way, All for One's kind of into that too, although his is a bit more specific kind of despair.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And all we need now is for Dystopia the Despondent to show up in Yu-Gi-Oh! Sex.
Fucking Despondent. That's the lamest title for a character.
I don't feel very good about fighting today.
My name's Luther the Depressed. I'm gonna get you.
Then we cut away to where Yami and the High Priest are still observing the action, and Yami says, okay, this is enough of this. I better get down there and clear things up. And the High Priest is like, well, I can't undo the magic that's holding us here.
About so, that.
So Yami's like, whatever. He just cuts his way out anyway. But there is a barrier that's still sealing them inside, as a spatial magic user has put them in a bubble, basically, so that nobody can get outside of where they're observing things from. This is the first of Beast Magic Guy's followers that we actually get to see in detail, aside from just a figure in a hood.
So, now, is this dude in addition to the two guys who came with him?
I don't know. I don't know if he was one of the ones that was in the group, or if he showed up in a different place to be in with. I guess we'll find out eventually.
Sure.
Beast Magic Guy, of course, remembers Yami, and he knows that he's watching and specifically says to him, you wait there and just watch for a while. I'll season you with the despair of your friend's deaths and you'll be my main dish. Again, this is that Toriko, what the fuck's going on?
I like this guy a lot more than Acacia, though.
I mean, because he's not attached to somebody with a stupid nose, so there you go. He's got a cooler design than Acacia, I think. It's much simpler, but it's much more straightforward as well. He is built up pretty heavily. You know, the fact that Yami's not able to help them out is really big, because we have to keep talking him up. He's basically at least strong enough that he can go toe to toe with a Magic Knight captain, and Yami is the only one of that level there.
Yeah, this isn't even like necessary fairy tale where it's like, oh, Makarov can't get involved, but hey, you know, they still have Urza or Lax or something like that. Like, Yami's just clearly better than anyone else in the guild. Like, it's not even a question.
So Yami gives an announcement via the loudspeaker spell or whatever. The thing that the High Priest was using in order to make declarations and declare rules and such during the contest. Which is, this guy is one of the leaders of the Eye of the Midnight Sun. He's captain level, and also two of the guy's underlings are down there as well. So I'm assuming that the third one is the one with the spatial magic, because we definitely saw three figures with him before.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But he tells them, stuff happened. I can't get there myself.
I love actually that description too. He's like, all right, so here's the thing. Stuff happened. I can't get there. And you even see Finn like, what do you mean stuff? What does that mean?
So he tells them, all of you, surpass your limits right here and right now. And if you die, I'll kill you. That's it. And Finral, I do really like Finral's remark on that. Well, it doesn't ask for much, does he?
I guess Finral's maybe my secret favorite character in the Black Bulls. He's just the one who's just like, all of you weirdos are so insane. I'm only here because I like a lot of chicks.
I honestly think that this is... I'm not sure if this is the intent or not. I think that Yami's speech was fucking terrible.
No, I like his speech. It's just, it's a cool line. I think it's somewhat dampened by the fact that I think we got this same kind of thing not too long ago in My Hero Academia with a bit more oomph to it when it was Aizawa announcing, like, all of you have the permission to fight. Like, in this one, it's still that same kind of cool moment of, like, the leader speaking out to all of his students who's saying, go all out because I can't be there to help you surpass yourself. It's cool in that way. It just doesn't have the same kind of build-up to it that the My Hero moment had.
Well, my problem with it is we've heard, because this is Yami's big thing, and it's, you know, it's a good thing for Ass to, see him as an idol and, live by his motto, set him as an example on how to act and stuff like that. That's great. His thing is, whenever you encounter a challenge, surpass your own limits, get stronger, and just overcome it. You know, just do it. But it's a very one-size-fits-all kind of statement. You know, it's... I don't think that... I'm not, like, saying it's like, oh, he should, always know exactly what to say and stuff like that. I'm not saying, like, this is, like, a problem I have with the chapter. I'm saying this is just something I'm noticing about Yami, which is, this is kind of his one thing.
I feel like...
Surpass your limits, and go do it, guys. And I think that that's intentional, honestly. That's, like, the only thing he really knows about getting by in life. And so that's just his leadership approach. Just, you guys do it. Go. Get stronger.
I feel like he's also used that line, if you die, I'll kill you before.
Probably.
So maybe that plays into it a little bit. I still like the moment well enough, though.
And I think that it's fine if he says that kind of stuff, but I do think that there should be more than just Finral going, oh, great, yeah, sure, thanks, Cap. But he does have a bunch of weirdos working under him. But
it is the organization of freaks.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the thing that's like, all the people who work for him are just like the weirdos who would be willing to listen to something as insane as this. And Finral. Anyhow.
We have to find out if that dude's got like a dragon in his stomach that talks to him or something, because he seems way too normal to be in this guild otherwise. He's like, my only thing is I like a lot of women. I hit on women a lot. I don't know why I got put in this guild.
And the High Priest decides, okay, you know what? We're going to change the rules of this contest now. If you help to defeat the Eye of the Midnight Sun team, you know, if you contribute, then I'll grant you any wish that is within my power. It's no longer a matter of, you know, winners and losers. Just contribute to defending the temple, and you'll get the reward.
So I assume that means what's her name's going to help contribute to that, and then her dream's going to get to be an idol somewhere out in the world.
And Kiyato's going to go dance somewhere and not be a sword.
They'll be like, my wish is to get magic that's better than dance magic. Can you do that? He's like, yes.
Literally.
Here you go. Grasshopper magic.
The first try with no magic. What the fuck? My powers are worthless.
Alright, fine. You get a... singing magic. They're like, you fuck!
Kiyato and Asta decide to put their showdown on hold.
You just see the guy, the old man controlling everything, going to like that random superpower generator online. He's like, yeah, you get a urban empowerment magic. Here you go! And he's like, what does this even mean? He's like, I don't know, you get stronger in cities and figure it out. You have a spell book.
You look it up in the dictionary. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, you got it.
Beast magic guy, having seemingly defeated all the opponents in his path, goes looking for new prey, but Luck and Magna stand up behind him, and Magna specifically says, you know what, after what Captain Yami told us, we're not just gonna, you know, lie down and take this. And they both say, I'm not gonna lose. And there's this awesome panel of the two of them standing up, and they're hunched over. They're both bleeding from the mouth, bruised everywhere. Big, you know, intense, wide-legged pose with their elemental magic surging off of them, and their grimoire is floating in front of them. I really like it. It's a really cool cool image. Beast Magic Guy is just like, all right, yes, well, you're stubborn.
I think we need to give him a voice, though, right?
Maybe.
What voice would kind of fit this guy?
I don't know, Scooby-Doo.
Oh, the more stubborn the prey, the better it is when I finally restrain.
You can do that laugh way better than I can. It was, you know, a kind of an up and down chapter of Black Clover for me.
I like the
way it finally ends. I'm a little bit unimpressed by Yami's big speech, but I do like the build up that the Eye of the Midnight Sun's leader has been given. Hopefully this won't just end with Asta being like, I know, I'll just act like a monkey, and that'll let me completely copy his beast magic without magic. We'll see how it goes.
That is true. Now, I like this chapter a lot, and I honestly feel, especially since we've taken... the Demon Daily Diary whatever thing out of the recap, essentially. I feel like every series this week was good and viable contender for Chapter of the Week this week.
Now that Takuya Nobatsu is
literally now that's good, I don't need to put air quotes around it or like an asterisk. It's all chapters this week, except for the jump chapter, jump start. I think all of them are really good chapters, and this one's into it. I liked it for the reason you said. I like what they're doing to build up the Evening Sun guy. And I didn't have any issues with Yami's little kind of opening bit there. It kind of worked for me, his speech. So I dug what they're going for. The only thing that bothered me about that chapter is the facial hair decision of that one guy, and that's just a stylistic choice. I don't understand why someone would do that to their face. I just don't.
All right, let's move on to Bleach. 675. You ready for this, Chris? You ready for this title? Ready?
Yes.
Blood for my bone.
Seriously, Bleach chapters are dumb as crap sometimes, and then sometimes I'm like, how is this not like a Monster Magnet album title or something? This is awesome.
Blood for my bone. Flesh for my steel.
Oh, you've written the first lyric, Nick. Keep going.
Eye for an eye.
Or we could do it more Metallica version, like, blood for my bone. Flesh for my steel.
I am the table. Okay. Like last chapter, we begin with Ishida and Hushfaltz, and then transition into Ichigo and Yobak. So, last time, Ishida basically said a bunch of stupid shit, and then he formed his Quincy bow. This chapter opens with him having his Quincy bow already formed, and then he's like, well, you proposed a philosophical question for me, but I have a question for you, which is, why did you ask me that philosophical question? I don't know why you are so interested. You must have realized my objective was to buy time for Ichigo to get Jihabak. Instead of asking me all those questions, should you have taken me down as fast as you could so you could rest you, Jihabak? And I will further filibuster in order to keep delaying you with many war words and paragraphs and just stand here until you react. And Oswald just says, well, I already know what's going to happen. See the future? Remember? I can do that?
Yeah,
I can do that. So,
well, I love his response to it, or he's like, whole, like, shouldn't you have known that you know, what I'm trying to do, and shouldn't you just killed me? He's like, have you forgotten that I have the ability to see the future? And then, like, or you're being like, but can't the future change? He's like, oh, that's cute. No, the true terror of the Almighty is not the power to see the future. And just Ryu's like, there's that moment where you just, like, you can't hear it, but quietly there's like, what? it gets worse?
You see, this is not a don't go from 1 to 10.
There's a stronger. You thought that the bended rank went from A to Z? No. That was only the first row of the Vandenreich. Now, all of our kanji Vandenreich shall come out.
I mean, Ishida should probably just know this from sheer, like, knowledge of language. The Almighty is a different thing from the All-Seeing. It is not omniscience, it is omnipotence. You know? There's different definitions and meanings. Just because he can see all, that would not make him mighty. So he is also all-powerful. And she was like, wait a minute! No! I thought he could just see the future! This guy who can take all the powers of the Vandenreich back into himself that I have heard of.
Well, it's interesting. It's something I just kind of thought about and haven't really put much thought into. But Uri was supposed to be the next recipient of the A.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's ever going to play a part in the story again. Because that whole thing was, like, built on the idea of, like, you will be our next leader. And Uryu was like, totally. I am totes aligned with you guys. Which didn't
all
have, like,
right,
a real
yes,
payoff.
I have been engraved with your power. What did I agree to carry again? It's all seeing this. Right?
Yeah, it's like, what is
yes,
this?
You'll be able to see all, and that is it.
Yeah. It's like, what does all those powers do? Oh, man, there's way too many lines on this. I'm just going to shoot me a lot of eyeballs. Let's go with that.
So
sure, it's never going to play a factor to things.
We then cut away to Ichigo continuing to repeatedly charge in after Yudabak, but until Orihime catches the sleeve of his Shinigami uniform, and Orihime just goes, calm down a second. Ichigo looks back at her, dashes it again. And Yubox is, why are you rushing to your death? I do not understand. And he goes on and on, talking about, like, blah, blah, blah. I understand, you're afraid. Dur, 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 dur. Orihime shields him from another attack with her powers. And Yubox says, your friend is saying that you can't die. She is telling you to heal your wounds and fight. So respond, Ichigo, to the voices of the powerless. For the weak who can barely breathe without you, stand up, fight, and die.
I fucking love that speech, though. Like, that's pretty much why I like this chapter so much. I love how he's just like, your friend's saying you're dying, so heal your wounds and fight. Respond to their voices and die. You know, like, build yourself back up for your inevitable failure before the Almighty. I'm like, God damn it, that's a cool speech if nothing else, man.
Orihime shields him again, and Ichigo thanks her, and then Orihime says, I knew I couldn't keep up with you. I barely got a hold on you, but you stopped. The look on your face when you looked back, flashback to literally 3 pages ago, it wasn't the face of a person who's lost himself. I knew you had something in mind. You just got all that from him, just kind of going,
well, to be fair, she has seen him more than once when he's gone, like, completely bananas berserk.
Right.
And, like, the fights with Okiora, and I think he even did it in the fight against Grimmjow. Like, I can't remember if she was present or not for it, but she has seen him when he's lost control of himself. So, if she's able to grab a hold of him and look into his eyes, I could buy the idea that she's like, I read enough into them to see that you have control over yourself.
Well, my issue with this when I see that is just, like, why is she even bothering to bring that up? Like, would she not have shielded him if... Because...
I think the notion is that if he didn't look like he was in control, she would have tried to stop him from going back in. I mean, could she have? I don't know. But that's the notion I'm buying into.
Oh, Orihime just, like, grabs Ichigo, puts him in a fucking full Nelson and stops
him. Oh, yeah, she, like, rear naked chokes him. She's like, you're not going back in there! All 110 pounds of her, 30 of those pounds being her breasts.
Oh, yeah, that's totally how that would have gone down. Whatever. Anyhow, Ichigo's sword is now glowing with, like, white Quincy spiritual pressure. Or at least part of the blade is. And there's an explosion of power behind Rime's shield, and Yubok says, I see, so that's what you are trying to do. And the smoke clears for a big 2-page spread of Ichigo looking stupid. Oh, he's got one horn. That makes him look cool. Looks stupid. You know, oh, my God. Why do Ichigo's transformations look stupid half the time? Sometimes he looks freaking badass when he transforms, especially like when he gets like hollow traits. You know, there was the time when he first got the hollow mask, it was like half a mask. There was the time when he went full hollow, that was a cool transformation. There was the time when he went like horned devil hollow, that looked pretty badass. The time that he had that really unstable transformation when he was training with the visor, that looked cool. This one looks stupid. I'm sorry. Like, single black streak over one eye. God, I hate it.
Did you hate the chapter?
I didn't hate it. It was okay. I just think that Ichigo's transformation makes him look stupid.
I understand that. It's not the best way to end it. It's another 2-page spread, too, where you're just like, there's not enough emphasis on this to be excited for it to warrant spending a 2-page on this, essentially, you know? Like, I know it's just the Kubo thing. Anytime someone shows up, gets a redesign, does a power-up, it needs a full-page spread in his mind. But this is really one of those moments where, like, half of this 2-page spread is just whiteness. Like, there's nothing on this left. Like, if you divide this page in half, you get a little bit of his shoulder and dust on that left page. There's really no need for 2 pages here.
Also, he's got kind of a Super Saiyan hair thing going, because, like, all of his hair is sweeping back, so you can see the giant black streak going down all the way from the top of his head.
I just assumed he was also now Toshiro. Like, this is a... like, he's also become Hot Hitsugaya.
Rip and Reggie show up for the fight, and they're like, you must be Toshiro's other older brother.
He's like, yes, I am!
Wait, why am I claiming that?
Why am I buying into this stupid lie that I don't even know exists in the first place?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I do like Yubak's speech. I do like Hashwa just, like, being like, you should be, you're a fucking idiot. but, I don't know, the transformation just does not make me go, oh, Ichigo's got his Quincy powers now, he's gonna kick ass. It makes me go, you look stupid.
I still like it for the good parts of it, though. The bad parts aren't enough to take it away from what I think is an effective villain chapter. So,
but if I have mixed feelings on a Bleach chapter, it's normally a good sign.
Yeah, that's usually a great chapter. Like, this might be one of Nick's top three chapters at the end of the year, so...
Alright.
Alright, let's...
Fairy Tail!
Yes, Fairy Tail, chapter 487, The Third Seal, with a very, skin-revealing cover page of Levi and... You can almost see Gajio in there. He's halfway cut off from being in the panel. It's really like a, look at this attractive woman and her guys back there. Oh, fucking Natsu, who cares? The castle. Whatever.
Oh, also, if you peer really closely, you can see Lucy's cleavage. That was important, too.
Yeah, well, I couldn't assume they went with that. But so, we open up with August having his conversation with Brandish and the others, and Brandish is like, I'm here to negotiate with you. He's like, whoa, there's Jacob and Carol? Because he's old. He has to have the old man voice. Whoa, he's dead as shit? And she's like, no, he's been defeated and captured, so he's not dead. Where's God Serena? He's like, he's in my heart. Tap, tap, tap. I think that's what he does. He just says he resides here now and puts his hand on his chest and there's like a sound effect. So, well, I don't know if he absorbed him.
God Serena was the guy with all of the different dragon slayer magics.
Yeah.
That Acnologia fucking destroyed.
Well, that's so, why I wonder when he says he resides here now, if he means...
Maybe he sealed him somehow and is carrying his magic around somehow.
It would make sense. Yeah, it would make sense, since it would be really weird to have had God Serena just be killed off for Acnologia. But, you know, Lucy's having, like, a conversation with Natsu of, like, how enormous Brandish's magical power is, and even compared to August, hers is nothing. Like, his is so absurdly beyond it. And August is like, doesn't look like they tortured you into doing this, so what could have made you betray us? And they're like, you know, I haven't betrayed anyone, I'm still a citizen, I just see no purpose in this war. He's like, betrayal! Get her! He just says, I like
what he says to her, which is the fact that you're even considering that means that you've betrayed us.
Yeah. Those very words are betrayal, His Majesty. We have sworn our lives to the Emperor. If you cannot see the purpose of His Majesty's war, then you are nothing but an enemy. Cut away to the rest of Fairy Tail fighting against the forces up north, and... I stopped to wonder who the leopard man was and realized it was Elfman, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. His stupid sister's next by in like a tiger bikini fucking fighting, and I was like, what is the point? Your magic sucks, it's worthless.
Yeah, I love that panel because it's like, there's Elfman, he's getting really monstrous and demonic, here's Mira Jane in her full demon form, and there's Lysana and he's wearing a cape.
She's like, roar! Shink, shink! Shink, shink, shink! I'm gonna punch you for a while!
Just like, one of the enemies just like reaches into his pocket, throws a ball of yarn at her. She's like, yeah, I'm worthless now!
She's like, oh, my one weakness! I mean, many weak water! Anti-magic! People who are strong! Or people who are very fast! Or people with really good magic! Or people with specialized magic! People who have minor magic, like just fire, but who are adept at using it! People with mirror magic, because they're probably more experienced, and, you know, I'm just bad at this. I'm bad at everything. We cut over to Levi. Sorry, that's her name. Levi.
Juvia and Levi have combined.
Levi.
There were too many blue-haired girls in Fairy Tail.
They just had to merge them together. They had to compress it. Levy, who's like, you know, I'm fine. This mask I created is perfectly, you know, capable of getting rid of the anti-magic particles. And Bradman's like, you know, the first seal steals magic with anti-magic particles. The second seal is this harvest of skulls that opens to the portals of the afterlife. And the third seal is the god of death's judgment in your lives. And like, what the fuck are you talking about? They're like, oh, he has all the powers of all the demons of Tartarus. I'm like, thank you, Gajeel. This makes a lot more fucking sense than whatever this dude was trying to say. Well, apparently,
at the end of his speech, his whole body is just pouring off anti-magic particles. It's really cool.
It's cool. It's a stupid explanation,
says,
though.
There is no hope for you to survive.
Yeah, we know that this dude is comprised of anti-magic particles already, though, so it's sort of like a weird explanation about seals that I don't quite understand. Again, essentially, he's just explaining, I have the power of all the nine demons of Tartarus, which is a pretty significant fucking thing, because that implies he also has Kyoka's sense manipulation magic, which means she could just instantly put anyone's pain threshold up to, like, you know, super sensitive, and just make everyone go insane, and because they're not Urza, they'd have no way to counter it.
I know that none of you have a sense of friendship that allows you to see for some reason.
But they're stunned by this, because they didn't realize that he had cursed magic, and that is technically different. Cursed magic, you know, has a whole different thing. And they recognize, like, holy shit, this dude has so many different abilities that he can use. I don't know what we're going to do about this. So he summons a whole bunch of water, and Levy, like, makes a hole underground, like a drain, to get rid of all the water. And he's like, great job, Levy. Oh, shit, you're dying. And, you know, she kind of notes, like, yeah. The mask didn't actually do anything. Like, I just told you that it did, but anti-magic particles can be absorbed through the skin. He's like, it's a shame because I actually like this moment, but he has this panel that he's like, then why did you come here? But it's too comical of an expression for the, like, dramatic weight of the moment. Like, it's just drawn in the way fairy tale.
It's followed up by a really good panel from Levy.
Yeah.
She looks like she's dying.
Yeah, it's just this particular panel is drawn in the way fairy tale would draw a comedic moment. And then it cuts away into, like, a serious moment.
It's the mouth.
Yeah, it's the mouth that really tears away at it. And the eyes, too, are kind of a little too large. But anyway, you know, it's like, why did you come here if you knew it wouldn't work? It's just like, because I wanted to save you. And it's like, oh, it's a kind of touching moment. She passes out. And presumably because the anti-magic's inside of her, she's just going to die at this point. At least that's what we've seen. And once you ingest too much of it, it's just a dead sentence already.
Well, she'll be fine. It's
yeah, it's fairy tale. I think she'll be all right. But Gajeel starts going nuts and starts hammering into this guy, using all of his powers just to try to, you know, break him apart. But, you know, this dude is just anti-magic particle. It doesn't seem to do anything. And we see Gajeel goes into a flashback about all the times in the past, like how he was the last member of the Fairy Tale Dragon Slayers to get a cat. He didn't get Lily Panther until they went into the other world, and how, you know, she's activated her dragon force and he hadn't gotten to it then at that point. Even Sting had been like, oh, you finally joined us as a full-fledged dragon slayer. And, you know, he's always the last, and how he's so frustrated and he feels so pathetic and he just wants to give up and run away, but he doesn't care because in this moment, none of it matters. He just wants to protect the woman that he loves. And
Full confession, the first time I read this page, that panel literally made me tear up. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I read that build-up, and then I read that, and it's like, I don't care about any of that. My, you know, the woman I fell in love with is dying. That's all I care about. And I was like, oh, it's in my heart.
It's really the fucking cartoon characters, Nick.
Oh, you
I'm just like, until Osamu kicks ass later this week, in which case I start crying. But
it especially works, this whole build-up especially works because of all of the, you know, romantic couples in fairy tale who've gotten, especially of late, Levi and Gajeel have gotten the most focus in terms of, you know, showing their bond and how close they've gotten.
Well, they've also felt the most real of, like, a couple. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because they don't put too much fucking focus on characters, the other, like, on Gajeel and Levi, so they don't have as much moment to, like, have the stupid storylines or things like mm-hmm. that. Or maybe it's just because their storylines hasn't been, interjected with a whole bunch of drama, like the Urza-Gajeel, or not, Urza-Gerard romance has over
right.
and over
it's
again.
Like they've implied to have been dating or something for a while.
And then a time skip happened, and they just confirmed outright they're a couple now.
Uh-huh. And when they interacted after that point, it's like, no, they seem like a couple. Like that yeah. moment where Gajeel is teasing Levi to get her spirits back up. You know, as opposed to... I feel lonely without your host, so I'm going to force all of you to play strip poker. And let's get drunk, because I'm lonely today. And then I'll stumble outside naked and come across... That was a really fucking weird
chapter. That was a fucked up chapter. That was just period of fucked up chapter. But because of this, like, moment, Bradman notices, he's like, he's eating the anti-magic particles. Why are you eating the anti-magic particles? And... Gajeel transforms. He suddenly becomes black iron. And
he looks fucking badass.
Gajeel realizes, like, holy shit, was he just eating the iron that's inherently within these anti-magic particles? He was eating poison just to make himself stronger, knowing full well what the ramifications of that are going to be. And because he's now black iron, you know, because I guess his steel is kind of infused with anti-magic particles, he's able to physically attack Bradman now as though he were solid. So, in your mind, he's Luffy, he covered his fist with water, and now he can punch Crocodile.
Basically.
So he's now just kicking the shit out of Bradman, and...
They make a couple notes of, like, that this is somehow a point of no return for Gajeel. Is it because he's absorbed curse magic?
Or? It's because it's anti-magic particles, so he's eating them. Before, I mean, anti-magic particles still hurt him before, but... Or weren't hurting him before because he wasn't breathing, like his lungs were steel, so he couldn't be absorbed. But now he's literally eating them and absorbing them, so it is like he's just ingesting poison.
He's like killing himself. Okay.
Yeah, so it is still killing him. He hits Bradman with like a big punch that has that unfortunate issue of being the fairy tale sound effect of da-gwam. I mean, it's not doom, but like da-gwam doesn't sound like a cool sound effect, but he's had this entire fight on like a battlefield of skulls, so it's kind of a cool moment there. He you know, he does his final attack promising that he'll take Levi back to the guild with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he finishes, he undergoes the transformation, you know, it fades away, and he looks at Levi, and he just says her name, and all of a sudden a bunch of weird tentacles come out and grab him and start pulling him in, and you hear Bradman say, "If I must die, I will take you with me!" And that's how the chapter ends, with the next chapter being promised as the two of us, comma, always.
Better not kill Gajeel.
Better not kill either of these characters. Fuck, if you have to kill characters, goddammit, why are you going to kill the old ones who I want to see have a happy ending?
Really?
Why can't Lasana die? Like, she was always supposed to be dead.
Okay. Let's move on to Food Wars. Chapter 168, The Day They Met. This chapter opens up, like, with Misako still looking for Erina. And I like her. She's like, oh, she's not in her room, and she's not next door. Well, I guess she could be in someone's room. Nah, she wouldn't possibly be in there. Where are you? Just running off somewhere else. But yes, Erina has gone to Soma's room to talk to him about something, and she completely cinderizes it up, because she says, like, I should let you know that during your show, Gyaki with Tsukasa, I had very solid, logical reasons for choosing his dish over yours, so don't complain about what I said! And Soma's just like, yeah, I get it, you're right, I lost. Oh, well, good! Is that all you wanted to talk about? No!
Here's my backstory!
There is kind of an awkward moment where Erina, like, sits down to tell him stuff, and so it's like, should I give her tea?
Do I get tea for her?
I am the host, I guess. What's she here for? Erina says that when she was a little kid, She didn't have any passion for cooking or anything related to gourmet. She just kind of like went along with her training in terms of, you know, taste testing stuff, but she didn't really care about any of it. And she was actually kind of getting sick of it because there were so many people that were brought to her in order for her to taste dishes and stuff. And her grandfather was actually kind of concerned about it because he was like, you know, this must have been really tiring for you. Maybe you should take a little break. And he's like, no, I'm a Nakiri and I must, you know, help the family and so on and so forth. But then eventually one day she met Soma's father, Saiba, and her tasting duties actually were just canceled for the day. And so she wandered around the mansion. She smelled Saiba's food as he was serving it to her grandfather, and when she smelled it, her stomach went full cartoonish sound effect growling. So she was like, "Oh no, it's I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry I interrupted." And her grandfather was like, "Oh well, we are having a business lunch, and this is a private affair. Please return to your room." "Yeah, I'm sorry." And Saiba was just like, "Why don't you join us? You know, because it's really boring if just two old guys like us eat together and so on and so forth."
Well, I like that.
And he also has this moment where he's like, "Wait a minute. I thought that you said that you kicked everyone else out of the mansion to make sure no one else was around so that we could eat together." "Shut up. I'm trying to teach her a lesson."
Well, no, because I like that he notes, he's like, we're having a business affair, so could you please go back to your room? She's like, "Yeah, I'm sorry." And she doesn't, like, impose upon it. It's just her stomach gurgles again, and Saiba just kind of being the guy he is. He's like, "Ah, well, why don't you join us?" Like, he's just being a nice guy.
And, thankfully, there's no moment of her clothes exploding off, because in flashback, she's like 8 or something. It's actually a really cute visual of her, like, in this, like, summer dress wandering through a field of sunflowers. It's really sweet.
Yeah, I remember, because his whole cooking thing, too, is food from all around the world. So it just kind of creates this very peaceful sensation. She, like, feels like she's inside of, like, a giant field of sunflowers, and she says, "It tastes fun."
Mm-hmm.
You ever had that, Nick? You ever taste something so good you felt like you were in a sundress walking through a field of sunflowers?
Can't say that I have.
Oh, you're missing out.
Need you eat your
I had that every time I go to Five Guys. I take a bite and I'm like, "Oh, look, I'm in a sundress!" And I'm like, "Sit down!" "No! This is my fantasy! You get out!
Give me more of your free peanuts!" I have no idea why they do that, but I fucking love it. Erida apparently was still very Tsundere at the time, because she was like, "Grandfather, what about..." "No, not gonna ask about him. No, never mind." And she, the way she words it is actually really kind of funny to me, because she says, "A lady asking too many questions about a gentleman seemed like an immodest thing to do."
I'm like, did you worry that they're going to worry about a romantic scandal between the two of you?
Well, she seems to act like she had a crush on him.
Well, she did, and maybe that is probably why it played such a big role into things.
None of them would have been like, you know, whatever. They would probably just be like, "Oh, sure, we'll call him over, and he'll be like a dad to you." And he'll be like, "Yes, that is how I think of him." Erina sums up the flashback by saying, "You know, that was the day I first realized how amazing cooking could be. But about 6 months later, father came and began his training." And even in Erina's mind, she's like, you know, thinking back on it, and her father is this, like, demonic, ghostly figure looming over her. So it's clear how she actually thinks of her father, but she's just been trained so harshly that she, you know, still can't.
Just, yeah, when you're that afraid of them, you could recognize they're a bad person, but you just can't do, you can't speak ill of them.
You know, when she speaks to Soma, she's still torn about stuff, because she says, "You know, I was so moved by Chef Saiba's dish, but I can also understand how much truth there is to father's ideal. The culinary world of today is flooded with trite and uninspired dishes that call themselves gourmet. I have experienced that for myself to a nauseating degree for as long as I can remember." But she's then says, you know, I don't know what cooking is to me. And there's a great panel of, like, you know, two different flashbacks. One from very early on in the manga where she's, you know, just like, you know, stating matter-of-factly how terrible food is. And then another where she's so happy to be have experienced Simon's cooking.
I think that flashback's actually from when we saw her like after her training with Azami.
Yeah.
Because there's a shot of her showing how she became after time and time again of having to taste food and she just became cold and emotionless. Because she still looks very young in that. So you get the impression it's probably only like 2 year difference between them at most.
And Arianna finishes this up by saying, I feel lost and confused. I don't know who to trust or what to rely on anymore. And so Soma is just like, okay.
Do you ever get out of that bedgown or anything? Do you wear the clothes?
Didn't Hisako, like, bring stuff for you to change into?
Yeah. You've been here, like, a month now. Like, shouldn't you have other clothes?
Shut up!
We wear other things in nightgowns.
Yeah. And Arianna feels awkward very suddenly. She's like, it's rude of me to just babble on my personal problems. So I'm gonna leave now.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Yeah, so Soma says, well, you know, it sounds like all you need is to taste it again, so how about I make some for you? Some real Yukihira cooking right here, right now.
That's when she's like, oh, I love Fat Boy Slim. Right here. Right now. Right here. And that's like, because fucking Walken shows up, starts dancing. Like, I love Weapon of Choice. All the Fat Boy Slim classics are coming together.
So it was like, I made the food for you. Who cares?
Yeah.
Stealing Crystal Walken.
Look at him, he's magic.
Just flying through the freaking hotel for some reason. the rest of the manga has nothing to do with cooking.
Yeah, it's all just watching Christopher Walken in the Weapon of Choice video, reacting to it. It's a good chapter. I like the flashback.
All right, chapter, yeah.
I like getting to see her finally actually seeing what went down between her and Soma's father. And it's not, like, crazy. It's like he changed her life, like, saved her from a falling truck or something like that. But he influenced her very early impressions of food at a point when she didn't realize what kind of the point of it was. And then very quickly afterwards, all that was taken away from her, and she had to understand food in a completely different way. So it does make sense why she's a very confused person, doesn't really know where she's going in life and how she wants to use her talent of the Divine Tongue, which sounds a lot dirtier when you say it in or out of context.
Yeah. Especially when you consider the amount of times clothes get blown off. You know, just like, yeah. Oh, she has the divine tongue. She is 15! Shut up! Anyhow, yeah, I like the chapter as well. I like that Arianna, basically, they have this kind of thing where she's sort of realizing what's going on with her, but she still doesn't really know what to do about it. But, you know, it feels like a big deal that she is at least admitting that she's confused about what to do. Anyhow, let's move on to My Hero Academia. Number 92, One for All.
Couldn't be a significant chapter with that kind of name, though.
Nope. It's, we do a little bit of catching up with Deku's group. Todoroki and Yayorozu are making their way through the crowd to get away from the scene. And so basically they're like, yeah, we've kind of gotten to safety. Deku is communicating with Todoroki over the phone, and Deku says, yeah, we're also over by the station, so we're probably out of the way as well. It seems like our rescue was completely successful. We got Bakugo away. So in terms of the kids, it looks like actually everything is like fine, you know, no more Bakugo getting caught up and stuff. But that doesn't mean that everyone's out of hot water yet. And Bakugo is, you know, back to his usual ways. He's like, listen up! You didn't save me! You guys just happened to be the best escape option that I had, so I chose to come with you! It was on me, not you guys. Kirishima was like, yeah! Good choice!
You're so smart, Bakugo.
Bakugo says that he was concerned with not being in All Might's way. He wanted him to, you know, be able to fight. So Deku is, you know, thinking to himself, you know, did we actually do the right thing? Is he going to be okay? He's going to be okay, right? And of course, we already know that All Might is starting to power back down. after his latest attack against All for One. And it's a really weird visual, like his face, when we cut back to him, it's like, you know, it is really just half All Might and half, I forget his...
human name, his real name.
But, yes, you know, he's clearly losing control of the transformation. And All Might is really pissed off that All for One has brought up Nana Shimura, the previous holder of the ability, who is confirmed actually to be a woman.
Yeah, I was going to say, did we know this beforehand, that who is his previous master, the details about her? No.
No, specifically when I looked back and All Might and Gran Torino, when they're talking about her, they use male pronouns.
Hmm.
So, like, they just didn't know at the time that Nana was a woman. Because they, especially because they only said Shimura when referring to her. They never said Nana, which is definitely a female name. Or normally it is, you know.
Yeah, it was like, which one of the Ice Climbers was Nana? Is that the pink one or the blue one?
So All Might is really pissed off that All for One hasn't even mentioned her name. And in response, All for One says, "That fool of a woman put her stupid ideals first without the power to back them up. It was embarrassing for me as the father of One for All. And then she died such a pathetic death." And All Might rears back to punch All for One again, and he uses his combination power ability to just blast him up into the air. It's a really cool visual because All Might actually floats up next to a helicopter before he loses momentum. And Gran Torino, you know, flies through the air to help him out, and he's, you know, calling by his real name. He's like, "Look, this is just like what happened 6 years ago. You know, last time he managed to get away from you after he dealt you that horrible wound in your gut. This is your weakness. You can't just exchange words with them because he'll draw you in like this." And also, he's got completely different tactics and powers than the last time. So you've got to fight smarter than you are right now. And he really builds him up and gets Toshinori to refocus. Then we get a bit of, you know, just flashing around everywhere because the news is now picking up the battle and just broadcasting it. And a bunch of the students at UA are around in their homes watching the battle unfold. And I like how, like, tense Uraraka and Asui and,
Tokoyami?
Tokoyami too, but also, Aoyama, I think. Belly Button Dew.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mineta's just there with a thing of soda, he's just going, "Ah!"
It's just literally water falling out of his mouth.
So dignified. Everyone is, you know, like, "Oh man, this is crazy." Different people are having different reactions. Like, "Man, villains are really getting out of hand lately. I think the heroes are just slacking. Well, All Might will pull this fight off in the end." And All for One is looking as confident as ever, even with his helmet smashed open, and he says, "Tamura has been working so diligently to erode the trust in you heroes. I almost feel bad putting the nail in the coffin. All Might, just as you hate me, I, too, despise you. It's true, I may have killed your master, but you smashed everything I worked so hard to build. That's why I'm hoping to watch you die an ugly, brutal death." Another good villain speech for this week. And he starts to attack All Might again, and Grantor is like, "Okay, you know, you gotta dodge and counterattack this one." And All for One just points out, "Can you really dodge this?" And All Might realizes that there is a civilian behind him, and so he can't get out of the way, because if he does, she'll be harmed. And the blast goes off, and All for One keeps on taunting All Might, and he says, "I'll steal everything you've come to protect. First comes your image, which you've maintained despite your wound. Then your pride. The world will see you for the pathetic man you are, their symbol of peace." And when the dust clears, Toshinori is basically completely reverted back to his normal form. And he, like, his All Might bodysuit, you can tell, it's like, it's too big for him now. it's loosened around what, you know, used to be bulging muscles and stuff, and because the news is broadcasting this, everyone's like, what's going on? Why is he so shriveled up? What is this? And Deku's freaking out because All Might's secret is being revealed. And All For One continues to taunt him over, you know, this is your true form. But All Might's still determined. He says, you know, my body may wither away. You might expose me to the world, but my spirit makes me the symbol of peace. You haven't stolen away one bit of that. And All For One, it says in response, you're just like a stubborn child. Oh, but I wonder if this is enough to break that spirit of yours. Tamura Shigaraki is Nana Shimura's grandson, and he has hated you this whole time. I've engineered these encounters between you two, and you defeat him soundly. You won with a smile. So proud, despite your ignorance. And All Might's like, you're lying. It's like, no. And you know that I'm not lying, because it's just the kind of thing I'd do. Such an asshole kind of line.
What's wrong, All Might? Where's that smile? And you can see him trying to do the, like, smile thing in his fucking wrapped up fucking scar tissue-esque face.
Mm-hmm. And All Might flashes back to what, Nana, his teacher, told him, which is, when you have to save someone, they're usually in a scary situation. A true hero saves not only their lives, but also their spirits. That's what I believe. So no matter how scary things get, give them a smile as if to say, I'm A-okay. The people in this world who can smile are always the strongest. And it just cuts back to, you know, the present. And even with his weird, you know, triangular, cartoonish face, you know, his eyes are completely sunken in and blank, and his teeth are trembling, and he's just angry and upset, and that's it.
The pain is seeing his face in this form, because it already always looks kind of sad and, like, mm-hmm. defeated, but it's seeing it here and knowing what's happening that makes it so tragic to look at Toshinori's face. Like, it just looks so sad. This is fucking Utopia the Despondent. This is a dude who's just broken when you see that kind of face.
And he also feels guilty because he's been attacking Shigaraki, his master's own family.
Mm.
But then, all of a sudden, because he starts to cry. I think he's crying. It might just be the bath of blood, but he looks like he's going to cry. And then suddenly the woman behind him, who he stood in the path of the blast to protect, she calls out and says, you can beat him, All Might. Please. Please save me. And everyone on TV is watching this, and a few of them are like, don't lose, All Might. You can beat him. And Bakugo and Deku are both chanting the same thing. You can win. You can beat him. And All Might activates One For All again. His muscles and his right arm start surging up just that part of his body. And he says, but of course, young lady. Indeed, there are plenty of things that heroes need to protect, All For One. That's why I can't lose. And he's smiling again. He's got blood pouring out of his mouth and across his face, but he is smiling.
It's a heartbreaking fucking chapter.
It's a great chapter, up to down, I would say. You know, despair and then, you know, just a little bit of hope, but also the note of, he's probably going to die.
Yeah, that even though he's coming back and fighting back, he's already used up his energy. He's using it more, and we know that the more and more he uses this, the closer to death he gets. And knowing full well that Bakugo and Deku are both watching him right now, and putting so much emotion behind it, and the entire city's watching it. If he does die here, the entire world essentially will be witness to it.
Yeah.
Like it's a tough thing. But even if he doesn't die here, it still just feels like a huge moment. But I love that even with All For One, you know, revealing like I've orchestrated you defeating Shimura Shigaraki these past two times purposely so that he would learn to hate you because I wanted the only member of your master's family to just despise you, and how I've done this and placed upon you. Even though he's done that, it still ends with All Might having a moment where someone reminds him, like, you have to be a hero. And in his last moments, he gets into the character again. He's like, yes, of course, young lady. There's no reason for a hero to ever give up. I can't lose. It's just like, there's like a piece of very sad realization that it's like a bound to lose kind of situation in this, where it's like a lie he's telling himself to build up that figure of All Might. That's kind of interesting the way it's going to play out too.
Honestly, I think that that's a little bit of a pessimistic way of looking at things. I think that, I mean, if you can continue to do this and he fights to the end, that means he wins. Because All For One has orchestrated this in order for him to lose hope. Lose hope in what he's doing. But we've already seen he was already kind of growing despondent about things. He was already losing, you know, his sense of purpose before he came across Deku and then started to raise him up, you know, to become the next carrier of All For One. Or One For All, sorry. It's a little easy to get those two flipped around, sorry. So, I think that, obviously, if, you know, All Might were to die here with the world watching, it's going to have huge implications for the rest of the series, because the very way that people view heroes and villains in the world will be changing. But as long as he keeps on fighting and defending, you know, what's right, defending the innocent, and so on and so forth, that means that he basically wins.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Also, I think it would be interesting if they revealed who Shigaraki is, and All Might was the only one who learned about it, and he took the secret to the grave.
It makes sense. I mean, now that we know a lot more, though, about Shimura, it's tough to think that won't play a little bit more. Because we've even seen enough of her in this to know that a lot of the lessons All Might imparts to, like, Deku are lessons he learned from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the way that they kind of revealed that it's a her in this, too. Because I like that it's just something that revealed and wasn't, like, made, like, the cliffhanger of her chapter.
She was,
like,
a woman!
Shimura was a woman!
I
don't know why too, but at the same time, I also feel like I'm the asshole too. I was like, I never considered that his master was a woman either. I guess I just always heard or assumed it was a male pronoun, so something like that.
When I first heard the name Nana Shimura, I was like, that sounds like a girl. And then I looked back and I was like, well, they're using male pronouns in the conversation about Shimura, so I guess it's a guy.
But a great chat.
Nope, just avoided using them pronouns, I guess, before. Stupid Japanese and your gender neutral pronouns.
But a very great chapter.
Let's move on to Nisekoi. Chapter 219, I knew it. We're going to talk a little bit about this while Chris abandons the conversation to go and do stuff. Well, now that I know Chris isn't actually listening, I just want to talk about what an asshole he is. He'll never know a thing about it, because there's no way he would ever listen to this recording or watch the video again. Fuck you, Chris. I fucking hate you. Anyway. So, Claude had confronted Raku, and then Tsugumi interrupted. And basically, at the start of this one, Tsugumi continues to confront Claude and buys Raku time to go and find Chitage. And basically, Claude reveals that he knows more about the situation than a lot of people actually thought. You know, he knows that, you know, he actually knows why Chitage disappeared, and he tells it to Tsugumi during a brief cutaway. And when Tsugumi hears it, she's kind of shocked, and Claude insists, you know, like, you know, do you still want him to see her? And do you really want her to be under the, you know, do you really want blah, 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 blah. He's attracted to two of them. If he sees her, he'll only cause her more pain. Why do you want him to see her? Do you really think that he's worthy of her? And there's this, just, she just smiles and says, I do think that he's I like this moment because Tsugumi is basically just fully accepting that, you know, Raku's not in love with her, but also that she still cares for him. So it's just a cool little moment for her. And she gives a big, brief speech about how, yeah, Raku's kind of a clumsy asshole, but, you know, he's fair and he's decent and so on and so forth. And they start to fight, seemingly. An explosion fucking goes off. I don't know how that happens, because he has a gun in one panel and then just a fucking bomb goes off where they are, I
this
guess.
Is where Nisekoi... Everyone's like, Nisekoi's ending. I'm like, no, it's just becoming a battle manga. This is where Tsukumi realizes her explosion-based powers. Her love-based explosion powers. It's love-based. Oh, this has to be a thing. There has to be, like, a romantic battle manga somewhere. And if not, I'm making one.
Braku goes up to try and find Chidage, while everyone else kind of just reacts to the sound of the explosion. He comes across this mansion out in the woods, and he's like, huh, I feel like I've been here before. Wait, maybe this is where Tajiban was treated when she was a little kid. And sure enough, Marika comes fucking paragliding in, parachuting in, and like impacts Raku when she hits the ground. The ultimate flying tackle. Marika actually, after a brief conversation, says, I actually remember what happened 10 years ago. I've been lying about how much I knew this whole time. I knew, but I pretended not to. And she puts her key in Raku's pendant and turns the key, and it doesn't open. And she says...
It's like, ha! You're not the girl! Fuck you!
Well, and Marika says, I didn't want to tell you because I wasn't the girl you made the promise with. And so I pretend not to know because I was afraid if you found out who your real promise girl was, then your heart would be hers no matter what. And Braku remembers what Yui told him and is like, oh, she was thinking the same thing. So it's down to Onodera and Chidage, and according to what Raku's mother said after Chidage vanished, or maybe it was Chidage's mother who said it, it's probably Onodera who he made the promise with. It's like 90% or something at this point.
Well... It could also be a fucking, I made a promise with both of you, or something stupid like that, or a non-promise, like none of their keys work, and he's like, I couldn't choose just one of you to make a promise with, or something. I feel like the answer is going to be like a third option.
Maybe. Raku's like, oh. Markham, you know, and she's like, no, hang on a second, this doesn't mean I'm giving up on you, because I am stubborn. That is, like, number one on my list of character traits in my character biography. She asks, like, you know, are you sure, you know, you don't want to pick me, because I love you, I'd be really good for you, and Raku says, I appreciate that, but I'm sorry, I've already made up my mind, so... It's no more bullshitting around for at least 2 chapters. Because, you know, it's just like, he's made up his mind, which means we've only got, like, a month more to build this up. And Marika fucking leaves. Just, like, ladder drops down from a helicopter, and she just is like, bye, Raku dearest.
She pieces out.
And there's a cool little page because, you know, Raku says, I'm glad that you and I became friends, and Market looks genuinely happy when she says me too. And so he heads off to the top of the mountain to find Chidage. Meanwhile, Onodera has come across some place that she recognizes too. That's the end of the chapter. A couple of cool character moments in this that I really liked. So I wanted to bother to actually pay attention to it as opposed to, oh, this was a Yui chapter. Who gives a shit?
It's not a Ruri chapter, so who gives a fuck?
That's that.
So I heard you were shitting on me while I was gone, Nick.
What? You betrayed me! How could you tell him?
I tried to, like, silently step away to grab some water. Like, I was like, theater of the mind. I won't mention anything. Nick should just know I step away quietly. I'll be back in just a moment. And I come back to, like, a bunch of messages. Like, Nick really shit all over Chris. Isn't he the one editing these things?
You fucking traitors! You blew my cover, you assholes. I'm never going to trust you for anything. I was the red spy all along. Oh, God. Anyhow. Let's move on to One Piece.
One Piece!
Chapter 827, which is titled...
Topland. Not Chocolate Land, which is what I assumed it was going to.
And by the way, this is not about the Tonsada. They're not in this chapter.
Thank God.
Wouldn't want to have to speak like this anymore. Ugh.
Or like the, we still have fucking Rabbit. What's her name? Carrot. We still have Carrot in the Euphia, Ugara bullshit to deal with.
Garshu. There is a brief little detail as the Sunny Go docks in Totland as Peckham's tells, like, they got this guy who's...
Enormous nose man.
God, he looks... How can he see? He tells him...
I assume he just senses vibrations in the air via his nose.
Through his nose. As it covers his ears, too. God. He tells them, like, can you keep this a secret from Mama, you know, because we're carrying something sweet on board, and I want to surprise her, so don't report that this ship is docked. And like, oh, what a great idea. You're such a charming gentleman, Mr. Peckham's. Nice little detail to throw in there about, you know, it's like, oh, this is how they got in without notice. I like that. Meanwhile, Chopper and Luffy are freaking out because the entire town is made of chocolate.
Literally everything. Like, they're like, chocolate fountain! A chocolantern! Chocolate bats! Chocolate clothes! And I swear to God, the only thing I can think of when this happens is the scene from Simpsons where he's talking to the German owners of the power plant, and he's like, oh yes, Mr. Simpson, we understand. We are from the land of chocolate. And he goes to like a 5-minute long fucking vision of him dancing through Chocolate Land, which is him like eating a chocolate dog and a chocolate thing, and ends with him like, ooh, chocolate, half price. And then comes out to like, Mr. Simpson, he's like, what are you talking about, chocolate? This was 10 minutes ago. It's one of the best jokes in Simpsons.
Oh, God. This is like my nightmare.
It makes me really fucking hungry for chocolate, I'm not gonna lie.
And we get Nambi's costume change for this land, which is super German.
Very German. You know what? I think Oda saw that episode of Simpsons, is like, I'm gonna base a whole fucking arc around this.
Oh, great. New costume that pushes up Nami's breasts. Perfect. Womp.
And somehow leaves her with an assortment of clothing that I suppose qualifies as a skirt.
I like how even in the first... Because Karen is complimenting Nami, and she's like, oh, how do I look? Do I look like a pirate, Brooke? And Brooke is just, like, chilling out on the ground with a cup of coffee.
How fucking gentlemanly Brooke is a pervert. Like, he's always like, can I see your panties? And in this moment, he's just relaxed. He's just chilling underneath, like, a cup of, like, a steaming cup of, like, what I assume is chocolate coffee. He's just like, oh, you look marvelous. Your pantaloons look fantastic.
Next panel looks like fucking quintuple scoop of ice cream for little lumps on his head. Oh, God. Anyhow, Peckham's is kind of giving them the lowdown on what this place is like, and Carrot's like, oh, there are even minks here. And Peckham says, yes, this is Mama's dream, a land where all the peoples of the world can live together without discrimination. It has everything in this world. There are 34 other islands scattered around Whole Cake Island, managed by 34 different ministers. This entire stretch of sea is known as Totland, the total of all lands. So I guess Totland, but I don't know. It's just
I call it Totland.
Totland, total. The toddle of all land. But yeah, they're in Chocolate Town on Cacao Island, run by the Minister of Chocolate. The entire town is built of chocolate, and
it looks so yummy.
Yeah, Carrot's like, "Can I eat some?" And Peckham says, "Oh yes, you can eat as much chocolate as you like here, but the chocolate tiles on the roofs are against the law." Otherwise, they can't stand up to the elements anymore. The glass windows are under the jurisdiction of the Minister of Candy, and the pillars belong to the Minister of Biscuits.
And a bunch of things aside from chocolate are either owned publicly or private property.
She's like, oh, this is really complicated. Yes.
He's like, yeah, so you probably shouldn't just go about randomly eating things.
Where are Luffy and Chopper? Oh, they went into town to randomly eat things? Oh, no!
He's like, where's Luffy? He's not here! And they're like, oh, I already went into town. Like, oh, don't worry, we'll find them right away. And you just hear in the background, Careful! years! And Nami's like, there they are!
He's like, no! We go over to Luffy and Chopper being chewed out by some random police guy, who of course has like an ice cream scoop for on his hat or some shit, and they're like, oh, the chocolate walls are one thing, they can be replaced, but you ate the entire cafe! You ate not only chocolate, but candy, marshmallows, plus almonds and jelly beans! You have committed the crime of snackalism of private property!
Snackalism. I have to imagine the fucking translator had to have a field day translating that of snackalism.
And they're like, listen, there's a real good reason for what we did. Oh, well, let's hear it then. It was too good to stop.
I've had those moments. I talked about it on a podcast with my brother recently, but there's these things called Star Crunches, which are like Little Debbie snack cakes, but it's essentially like Rice Krispie, caramel, and then covered in chocolate. And, you know, I really do try to watch my weight. You know, I lost a whole bunch of weight and I try to stay fit, but I get one of those boxes, and it's like I become a crack addict. I'm like, well, I'm driving home, I'll just have one. Or four. Once I have one, like, I can't stop! They're so eatable!
Oh, God.
Nick, it'd be like if you opened up a package of brown sugar Pop-Tarts and had one, and then you just kept eating the entire box.
So, Chocolate Razzle here, is like, I'm gonna take Holly in for this. But then at that moment, the owner of the cafe that was eaten flies in on a magic carpet, which is saying carpet, so you know it's the carpet.
Carpet, carpet. Remember, the ships do this too. The ship's like, shippy.
And then, door. We all sing what we are. It's a cruel existence.
They seem to love it.
Yeah. And I have to take a moment to know, because we've just kind of glossed over it, how fucking fat Chopper and Luffy are after eating the cafe. They do look like they've eaten an entire building. they are just as wide as they are tall now. Looking so fucking satisfied with their selves.
By the by, I feel like we have to have potentially an argument here. What is the name of the cafe this owner controls?
Caramel.
All right, now I know you meant to say caramel, but in the moment it's caramel. There's a second A there. It's caramel.
Look, I'm from Florida. We say caramel down here.
I don't think that's a Florida thing.
I think I'm pretty sure that different pronunciations of words such as caramel, which is the right way to say it, are based on location. If you look it up, you know, because they're... It's like how, you know, like, you wouldn't say y'all, whereas some people are like...
I say y'all all the time!
Well, people were like, since when the fuck does Nick say y'all when I made a tweet earlier this week? I'm like, I'm from Florida! We can say that! Anyhow. We are introduced to the owner of Cafe Caramel. There.
There. Thank you. Thank you.
Who is not named yet, but she's Nami with pigtails.
Well, she's Pudding, is what we find out later.
She's Nami with pigtails.
Yeah, she is.
Like,
I thought her name was actually Caramel. I misread her introduction box at first, so I was like, uh-oh, we're going to have this argument over and over again every time she's brought up.
She's not exactly Nami, because, like, her face is drawn very slightly differently. Like, she's, like, wearing lipstick.
Her eyes are also drawn differently. She has very circular eyes. Well, I mean, to be fair, the eyes are what really set Robin apart from Nami in her nose. So it actually, I don't look at her and immediately think Nami the same way I would. It also helps that she has, like, bangs and shit like that. Like, she has...
The first panel that she shows up in, and I was immediately like, it looks like Nami. It really does. But then when the more, like, facial expressions she makes... Like, especially, like, the same one where she's, like, puffing her cheeks out. And she's like, oh, come on, you guys. It's like, okay, I don't see Nami anymore. Because Nami doesn't really make faces like that. But she makes up the story. And she's like, because she's like, so, hey, you know, you guys left this biscuit and chocolate here. And the harmony of jam, you left this jam, biscuit, and chocolate here. And, you know, I'm really proud of it. So why don't you try that and tell me how good it is. And they're like, it's so good. So the policeman is like, oh, I didn't realize you guys were dismantling expired products. And she says, yeah, yeah, I hired them to do this. Oh, well, come on, guys. You've got to put up a sign when you're working, you know, because there were still customers inside. Okay, no problem. And she gets rid of the police with her little story. And the policeman then says, oh, and by the way, Lady Pudding, congratulations on your marriage. So, it's Sanji's fiancé!
Dun, dun, dun! Dramatic reverb!
So, in addition to, under Sanji's judgment, her being a looker, she's apparently a very nice person as well. Which is a nice detail, I think, to add in, because, you know, Big Mom's one of the big four, and she's, you know, super...
As we see later on, she doesn't seem very friendly.
She's pretty creepy and horrible, whereas this woman who is... She's a daughter, right? Because they established she's, like, one of many daughters she has. Seems like perfectly nice.
She's essentially like the Walder Frey of the One Piece world. She just has a lot of fucking kids. Oh my god, if this ends in the Red Wing of the Straw Hats, I don't know what I'm going to do.
One of them tries to stab Luffy, and he goes, quink,
quink, quink. Well, no, a stab would work. It's if they try to, like, back in with, like, a bell, like a blackjack, then it'd go bad.
Pedro and the Straw Hats arrive on the scene, and one of the minks recognizes Pedro. He's like, oh, Captain Pedro, I haven't seen you in ages. Where are you? I love he just, like, grabs his muzzle, just folds his mouth shut, and he's like, don't tell anyone I'm here in secret. Oh, okay. Sure. And Nami asks, like, oh, you know someone here? And he says, I'll explain later. Really interesting, because, like, Pedro was just kind of, like, one of the guys up until, you know, he was just going along with them on this quest. It seems like we're going to probably learn a lot more about him as we go through this arc. But, you know...
How annoyed would people be if people like Carrot and Pudding don't join the Straw Hats, but somehow Pedro at the end's like, I'll join the Straw Hats! Everyone's like, God damn it. This crew has way too many dudes!
Sanji's like, can my new wife maybe come along with us? And like, is she a pirate? No, but she'll make us chocolate mansions. Okay!
Yeah, what's her dream? Build a really big chocolate thing? That works for me!
And then I can eat it! Everyone kind of meets back up in, I guess, Pudding's home? Where she says that the reason that she agreed to, you know, bail them out was because, you know, Luffy and Chopper were just like, oh, it was too good to stop, and she got really embarrassed and proud of her work, and that was why she wanted to help them. I do like that. It's like she just takes great pride in her work, and also she's just a nice person. So, she kind of gives a little bit of her background. She's like, oh, you know, I love sweet things. I like making chocolate and so on and so forth. Nami says, well, we do kind of have to get going. And she says, okay, well, I'll just, you know, make you some tea. And, by the way, who are you guys? And Luffy's like, I'm Luffy, the man who's got to be king of the... completely blowing their cover, as he's wont to do. And then we cut away to Whole Cake Island, where Big Mom is. God, this woman's creepy. She is surrounded by many, many singing flowers and singing people who are in a band. And they're like, we're going to make wedding cake. Yay, it's going to be so wonderful. And what's the design going to be like? It'll be perfect. What's the budget? Extravagant. What are the ingredients? Only the finest through murder and theft. And apparently, to prepare for this wedding, she has sent many of her followers out to wage destruction on the world in order to prepare to acquire the perfect ingredients for this. Destroyed entire villages just to get some eggs, flour, and fruit.
The perfect eggs, flour, and fruit.
Mmm. And, they're going to make a wonderful, tasty cake. And then, I think that's the sun that's singing. Yes, it is. She just has a singing sun, rainbow, and rain clouds, and mountains, and trees. Also, I'm guessing this is related to her devil fruit power. and there is this really creepy continuation of the song where he's like, is it strawberry jam or someone's blood? Either one is fine. If you're invited, you have to come. A demonic sacrifice for our sweet pastime. This is our beloved land of dreams, a country where all peoples come together. It's Toteland! Ugh. So creepy. Because she looks so out of place, this old, horrifying woman, surrounded by happy-faced, should-not-be-sentient beings.
Well, it's that thing, because we just did a Digimon commentary last night, where we went through a couple episodes, and we ended on the episode where Mimi and Palmon finally Digivolve for the first time. The whole thing was like Monzaemon and the City of Toys or whatever it was fucking called. And, right. Like, the joke we had was that it was so silly how terrifying Monzaemon was. He was just this giant thing in this, like, very cutesy, cuddly world. He was just like, I have balloons! Laser eyes. And it's the same sort of thing here, where it's just this giant woman in a world that's singing, and there's so much fun, but she's just drawn maniacally, and they're singing about, like, murder and blood and spilling guts and all this, like, horrible shit. But everything's smiling and singing. It's that inherent creepiness of something that should be cute and innocent being secretly very sinister. And it's just like, holy shit. Like, I expected this chapter to just be build up. Like, that one of those chapters you get at the start of a new arc of One Piece is just kind of world building. And at the end of it, I was like, this was one of the most effective introductions of an antagonist I've seen yet in One Piece. Because I'm, holy shit, immediately terrified of this woman. And she's created this very distinct, very thematic sort of aesthetic to her entire organization, group, world. Everything like that feels like it has a very distinct look, and it's so unnerving and cool at the same time.
Takuan and Batsu happens. That's it.
Third chapter. I don't think we're going to see any more, unfortunately.
I mean, literally, it got to the point where, like, because Batsu sees Takuan naked, and she's like, this must be equalized, and just comes in naked, and is just like, I'm done.
It was funny once. It wasn't funny, like,
I'm done. I didn't want to read anymore. I was just like, enough of this joke. Done. Anyhow, Toriko, Gourmet 372, individual battles. Guess what? Individual battles get set up in this chapter.
It's the weirdest individual battles, though. They're shipped, and I'm just like, I guess these dudes are not dead, or somehow.
I guess that Sunny and Coco just captured them like Pokemon or something.
They do. They just kind of released them. They're like, go, Grimpatch, Tommy Rod!
We get this cool moment where God just shows up how absurdly powerful it is by touching itself with its own tongue because it goes around the world.
Or it eats something off its own back, too, it looks like. Or it tries to. It actually connects to it and then pulls off, and then I guess just the whiplash from it just grabs everything else back on the way. I thought it ate one of the things off its back, one of the things that looked like planets, and that's how it, like, got its health back, essentially. And I was like,
well, basically, it eats everything in a line, because its tongue sticks out and goes all the way around the world, sticks to its back, and then draws back, and so everything that was in the path in front of it, and also behind it, gets swallowed immediately. Mm-hmm. And then it just, like, spins around in a circle and eats pretty much all the other beasts that were surrounding it as well. So Zebra goes over to what's his face? Kamatsu's
friend. Other chef.
Right. And he's like, I've erected a barrier around your body. Now listen to this sound bullet, because it's the method for preparing gods. Do it right. Meanwhile, Sunny and Coco and Zebra stand in Joey's path to prevent her from going after God, and she's like, well, I've summoned some more chefs in order to fight you, and his dress in Kurumato and Nijzini. And so then Sunny and Coco are like, well, we've gotten some people here too. Let me just spit out Time Rod. And Coco is like, yes, here's Grimpatch. Blah! We were here still, yes. So the two of them and Starjun, it looks like, are going to face off against the chef that Joey summoned. That's basically it. God is still eating. Joey tries to use her knife in order to attack what's-his-face guy.
But Sonny deflects it with his Satan hair, although it actually deals harm to him, which is impressive. And then, basically, Coco and Zebra all join in and start to attack Joey. Meanwhile, Toriko is fighting Acacia. We don't see what happened. We just see Acacia just on the ground, having been beaten up some. And Acacia is like, "Oh, you are the one who represents the current era. So straightforward, it's refreshing. Such pure appetite. I'm not the one who can make the gourmet dream come true. Toriko, is it you?"
And Toriko says, "You won!
You totally beat me.
I'm totes defeated!
Toriko says, "Well, don't get the wrong idea. Even if I defeat you, my dream will come true. Actually, there's just one thing. When you get to the Earth side, I want you to eat a meal with your family again. That is the one favor I have for you!" And then he looks down, and Neo's face is there, and it's eating his fist. And Acacia's like, "What? Oh, I'm not gonna do that. There is a difference between the battle cry of victory and the wails of defeat, and it's that difference that gives it flavor." And, yeah, so he says, "Take your time to savor the appetite of Neo. Let us declare that in a few seconds you will be driven mad with despair and die." So, doing the same thing that he's done with his opponent so far, which is, "Ah, you thought you were going to win. Nope, now you're sad, I'm going to eat you." Toriko doesn't look incredibly despairing yet. He mostly just like, "Why the fuck did your face change into this creepy looking thing?"
I think that's what I'm kind of excited about, is seeing Toriko fight this guy, because Toriko's personality is one where I've gotten into the feeling of fearing Neo. Not fearing him, but being intimidated by him, like being like, okay, he's done this well. But I'm kind of tired of him killing all these characters I like. It's going to be nice seeing him go against somebody who's not going to just, I think, fall into the same routine. Like, I don't think Toriko's just going to outright beat him. I don't think it's a simple kind of fight like that. But it'll be nice seeing him go against the hero of the story and seeing that presumably kind of come to a head. I want Neo to get his comeuppance, basically. And I'm glad it's coming sooner rather than later. Hopefully. Fucking Neo beats him, and then it's like 5 more years of the new challenger coming around or something.
Right. Let's move on to World Trigger Chapter 145.
Nothing important that goes on in World Trigger this week, Nick. Nothing important happens. Actually, before we even talk about World Trigger, I just want to note that the cover page of Jump this week, the issue cover, was World Trigger, and then World Trigger is a color page, and both of them are freaking awesome.
They're really great pictures.
I especially like
the two-page spread.
I don't get it.
I don't know why there are deer with triggers, but it looks awesome.
Yeah, like, it's the same thing. I don't know if you remember a while back we had one with a bunch of fish going through. And it's the same thing. Like, all of his cover pages seem to be the exact same pose of the four main characters of the series, you know, like, holding their try-on things and things like that. Like, it updates as things change, like their uniforms, and Chica's got the Black Lightning now. But it's still like, I don't know why there are a shit ton of deer with try-on horns. It's fucking awesome. It looks amazing, though, and I thought the cover page looked awesome as well. I love just the use of colors there.
The action pose, too, yeah. So, we pick things up where the fight left off last time. Katori's flashback is over, and so she lets off a barrage of bullets from her pistol. The commentators are analyzing this, like, oh, what's gonna happen now? Sniper guy, I really need to learn to
Tokieda?
Tokieda says, oh, you know, maybe Tamakoma is actually waiting for her to run low on try-on. Because they're in control. They're not in any rush. And Yuma's not bleeding out anymore. They, you know, also go cut over and analyze the showdown between Teruya and Chica, because Teruya's, you know, still sneaking around and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, Chica, you know, she has the lead bullet sniping. Her bullets can't actually be blocked, so on and so forth. And Teruya steps out of the shadows, charges in towards Chica. Chica shoots at her, and they're like, oh, she's got a clear shot, and Teruya doesn't have a grasshopper, so she can't avoid out of the way. And she holds up a piece of debris, and the lead bullet, hits it, turns into a weight, and she just kind of tosses the debris away.
Oh,
It's such a cool moment.
What I love about this is I love the turnabouts in quick succession that you're like, holy shit, that was it. That was the last thing they had to get past. And you're like, holy shit, that's what's going to end it. And it's like, holy shit, that's what's going to end it. We're just like, oh my god, they keep topping themselves and it makes sense. It looks so fucking cool each time.
And Chica puts away her lightning and she announces, how?
It's fucking huge!
This fucking huge cube of bullets alter into lead bullets and fire and fucking smother Teruya. Just falls to the ground like a fucking, looks like a fucking hedgehog. There's so many bullets. Teruya launches a barrage of bullets out at her, so Chica summons a shield. She manages to block a bunch, but much more curve behind her and actually take her down. And so Teruya actually gets the point. Knowing that she's a sitting duck with all the lead bullets, she just declares bailout. That's it. Both Chica and Teruya are down, but Teruya was the only one who got a point. Got a little bit of redemption there.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense. But it's I fucking just love that it's like, I'm going to jump straight forward towards you, and I'm going to use a piece of debris to block your lead bullet. And then you get back there, and it's like, holy shit, she has an entire hound full of lead bullets that she just nails me with. And it's like, but in that last moment, I'm just going to barrage you with them, and you can't cover from all the different angles because it's an open area. And that's what gets the point. It's like, God, I love how much effort it went into everybody to get to that, where you're just like, I don't feel like Chica looked lame in this at all. I feel like Teruya looked strong. Everybody looks cool because they all put so much effort into coming out ahead. And it's such an awesome moment when you just see that giant hound of energy of lead bullets behind Chica. You're just like, holy shit.
Chica's like, I'm sorry, you know, I got taken out. And someone's like, no, it's okay. You know, you did a good job. And Katori is thinking to herself, all right, if I take down these two, then with my survival bonus, we'll tie. So there's no way that I'm going to lose to them, even though I can't actually win anymore. I've got my arm chopped off. I've got my leg chopped off. I don't have much trying left, but everything is ready now. The little one's about to go down, and I've just got to get closer to stupid Four Eyes, and he's done. I'll take them out one by one. This moment right here is the one! And she charges in, and there is a really weird moment because I don't know exactly what happens here.
What she does is she goes in and she sees where the red wire is and purposely gets entangled on it so it can flip her around and she can catch Osamu at an angle that he's not prepared for, or seemingly not prepared for. So she twists, goes in, cuts him and kind of gets behind his defenses and cuts him across the neck, scores the point. But you can even see in that panel, he has a couple scorpions still in his hands.
Spiders.
Yeah, spiders. And Izumi says, like, oh, you know, those were visible, but I don't think he was going to do something without going down. Or he wasn't going to go down without doing something.
Right, right. Sure enough, she has been snagged again. So Katori's like, he got me again.
Oh, it's so satisfying. Oh, it's so satisfying, you dumb bitch. Fuck you.
And Yuma just kind of snaps his sword out, and it spears her right in the middle of the chest. There's a declaration. Her Triumph's supply is completely gone. She is forced to bail out. And that is it. That's the last bailout. So, Tamakoma wins.
Fuck you. Oh, it's so satisfying.
So, and pretty dominant, with a pretty dominant final score, I think, so that's going to be 7-1-1.
I think it'll probably end 6-1-1, because I don't think I don't think Yuma can get the survival bonus. I imagine
Then it would be 5-1-1.
Because
his survival is 2 points.
It might be like 5-1-2 then, because I don't know if they're going to credit. Maybe he does survive and it's a 7-1-1.
Right, who would be credited with taking Yuma down? Who
knows? Yeah, I think when they say survival, it seems weird to be like, this dude's clearly about to run out of Tron and die, like have to bail out. So it's weird to just be like, right under the wire.
But two great, great climactic moments on both sides of the battle come in this one chapter.
And, yeah, good stuff.
Oh, it's so goddamn satisfying to see her go down, too. I can't tell you how satisfying that is.
And I'm intrigued by the decision, because Osamu and Chika still don't survive the battle. They contribute a lot more to the fight, but it's not like they're suddenly elite badasses who win every one-on-one fight. Yuma is still clearly the ace. Osamu and Chika still have their weaknesses to work through, and still got taken out. But, you know, basically the Chika before would not have been able to basically pull a stalemate there. And the Osamu before would not have left that advantage for Yuma to, you know, pull off the final victory.
But so, we also, what we saw is that Osamu and Chika showed their capabilities in this match. And we showed that both of them made very impressive strides. And even when they were countered, they were still impactful in the match. Even though Chika couldn't shoot anybody, she did things to impact the battlefield. And Osamu, even going down, still shaped the battlefield in a way to make sure Yuma succeeded. And that's, I think, very important, because we know Husei is watching this match. And if he sees that that's the kind of caliber of talent he has around him, he won't look at them all as just a one-person team with people around him. I think he's going to see that there's value in all of them.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for our recap. So, it's time. What are our favorite series and weekly MVPs for this week, Chris?
That's tough. Going into this, I didn't honestly know what my favorite chapter of the week is. And even now, I'm sort of going back and forth on which one it is. I can't not do it, if only because I talked so much about it. So I'll say my chapter of the week is World Trigger, if only because we finally get to see that conclusion. We get to see Osamu go down, but he got to take Katori with him, essentially, and made her look like a fool once more at the end. I liked it for that, so I'll go there. But I think, honestly, I'd probably say My Hero Academia was a stronger chapter overall. I kind of have to give it to World Trigger, I think.
All right. I'm going to start with my weekly MVP by saying, let's see. I'm going to say All for One again, because what an asshole. What a perfectly wonderful, knows he's an asshole, revealing his plan to All Might. Has basically, at this point, seemingly everything going for him. Got what he wanted, has All Might's secret revealed, has him powerless and unable to really do anything, it seems, and also just to twist the knife, revealing, by the way, you've gotten your beloved master's only family member to hate you. So, fuck you!
Yeah.
So, I like that. I love that. And also, My Hero Academia, once again, winning our listener poll in the chat room for like the fifth straight week.
People like it.
What's your MVP?
I debated between a couple different people. Part of me was like, well, I have to give it to Osamu, right? And I'm like, I'm already kind of bending my rules a little bit, so I won't give it to Osamu, even though you were super freaking awesome. I thought also, like, you, All for One would be a great one. I think he was absolutely fantastic. I think, though, I'm going to give it to Big Mom. Because I think of, like, a distinct impression I got after the chapter. And I already had kind of was terrified of All for One. And I think he had great villain moments this week. But there's something about, like, the way I felt after that chapter of One Piece was like, holy shit, this is terrifying and awesome. I can't wait to see this keep going.
No, I got you. And my favorite series this week was Fairy Tail.
Wow.
I fucking love this chapter
of Fairy Tail. Is that the first time Fairy Tail has ever won a chapter of the week from us?
No. I did it once last year.
Okay.
I can't remember what that was about, though.
I'm assuming another Levy and
I think it may have been when Natsu just went fucking nuts and
kicked the shit out of, yeah, okay.
But this was just, I mean, it's a fairy tale chapter in terms of, like, pacing and, like, well, here's the villain who's been built up for, like, one chapter, and now he's lost. But
the characters that involve, you know, Levi and Gajiel, you know, it's just, it feels like a moment that's earned anyway, because of what we've gotten to see from them in this arc so far, seeing, you know, how they've progressed as a couple. And, you know, that moment of, like, you know, Gajiel realizing that Levi is in danger because her mask was never actually doing anything to begin with. And he asks, why'd you do something stupid like that? It was like, well, because you wanted to help them. And then he goes and does something stupid too, because that's what you do for people you care about. And like I said, that moment where he has that, you know, long reflection of like, oh, I've always been the one falling behind. I've always been ashamed of my own weakness, ashamed that I'm not on the same level as these guys, that I didn't even have a cat, and so on and so forth. But fuck all that. My woman's in danger. I'm going to kill this guy and take her home safely. And then he fucking does, and he turns into this demonic black metal thing and just punches the shit out of him until he's dead. And then the fight's still not over because the guy is reaching out for him from beyond the grave. Just so cool. And also, I should also give credit to that conversation that Brandish and August have. I thought that August had some cool lines in their exchange where Brandish is like, look, I just don't see any point in this whole battle. I mean... I haven't betrayed the kingdom or anything. I just don't get what we're fighting for. And him's like, well, just because you're saying that shows that you have betrayed us. You've betrayed our cause. You know, just very kind of Blood Knight approach to it. So I love that entire goddamn chapter. I think the only problem I might have had with it was like, goddamn it, hero, stop putting fucking cheesecake covers on every chapter you draw.
This chapter, you're trying to show your girlfriend, like, look how cool and awesome this chapter is. She's like, yeah, this is porn. You're like, no!
That's that. And I told people, it's like, you're gonna be surprised by my chapter of the week, and people were like, does that mean it's Bleach? I'm like, fuck no.
But you know what? That's the thing with this week. I legitimately would have been comfortable giving the chapter of the week to any chapter this week. I think every chapter we covered, in my opinion, were good chapters, were strong chapters. So it was tough to even pick one. Like, I know people are like, it has to be My Hero, it has to be All Might, hands down. I'm like, I think both of them are awesome. I think both of them are absolutely worthy of it. I just, some things I like differently. But all of the chapters this week I thought were really fucking good. Which is annoying, because I guarantee, like, a week from now or 2 weeks from now, it's going to be like, God damn it, nothing was good this week. Everything was just okay.
This is just the chapter where everyone's, you know, sad that All Might's dead. Nothing else happened.
Well, that'll win for me, because I'll just be playing Johnny Cash Hurt in the background while it's going on, and that's all I need.
Okay.
What's the saddest song, do you think?
I don't know. I don't listen to sad music.
I was thinking about this the other day, because I was watching some episodes of Scrubs, and they have Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley coming on at the end.
Oh, the
Hallelujah. I was like, that's a really fucking sad song, too.
Although it is kind of like, it's a
little. Well, it's negated by the fact that if you listen to the lyrics,
it's because it was used for sad montage in fucking Shrek. So,
well, it's also kind of weird that if you listen to it, you're like, this is definitely about sex, but
lyrically speaking,
yeah.
Anyhow, that is gonna do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We record the show here on hitbox.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you should follow us, however, on Twitter so that you stay updated on that stuff. He is at RoloT, and I'm at YRoller of Time. And, of course, we have at WR Podcast as our official Twitter account for the podcast. Be sure to check out our past episodes. You can find them on weeklymongrecap.podbean.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a comment and rating to help us beat the woodworkers. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube, because we put up video versions of the podcast there.
That's where we do it.
Yeah.
It's where we make the magic happen.
Also, people point out, it's like, doesn't Chris edit this podcast? He's going to find out that Nick was bad-mouthing him. And I was just thinking to myself, Chris doesn't edit this show.
I was like, well, to be fair, I edit little bits and pieces.
You edit some parts of the show.
Yeah, but I'm not going
to... And also, you do listen back in order to put the timestamps down so people can avoid spoilers.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
That too.
That's the only thing. Well, the thing is, I don't ever put Nisekoi in there because I don't consider it part of our regular recap. So I just glossed over it and be like, all right, so My Hero Time.
So that's your fault, comment section.
Then when does One Piece start?
Just skip right past it. Anyhow, so Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy, such as the commentary for Digimon that we recorded last night. You're going to be able to find that as we talk about how much we hate Yokomon and also how hilariously terrifying Monzaemon is.
That is great. We have actually quite a few people to thank. There's a lot of people, so a special thank you to Michael Jebbett, Main Entrance, Matthew Shaw, Keith Trudow. I feel like I know how to pronounce his name, and I get it wrong. Keith T. You know who you are. Zonbe and Marco Biagyar.
Don't know how to pronounce that one.
I've never seen it. I don't know how to do that one. I came close, I feel like.
Thank you guys so much.
Yes.
Yeah. Special thanks, of course, also go out to the people who helped make this wonderful show happen. Steve Mann, our tower artist. You can check out his work in many different places on many different corners of the internet, such as his multiple Tumblr accounts like I Draw Boobs, his own Patreon, Steve Mann, and NarayaFanboy.DeviantArt.com. And, of course, special thanks go out to Infamous Planet, our very British, whimy, asshole helper, man, friend, person.
Douche.
Yes. soon we will have a silent voice to talk about. It gives me feelings. Look forward to that. And, yeah, I guess now is the time when we go out on a wacky joke.
I was thinking, when you were saying that, I was like, ooh, Green Day, Good Riddance is almost kind of a sad song if you put it to the right moment.
I hate all the Green Day songs.
You hate all of them? I hope you had the time of your life.
That's so whiny.
How'd you grow up in the 90s without, like, getting at least one good Green Day moment?
I didn't listen to music in the 90s, that's how.
What was your graduation song?
I don't fucking know.
How do you not know your graduation song? You're like, I left high school. I was done with it. I didn't think about it.
I'm pretty sure it was just the... Fuck, what is it called? Dun, da, da, dun, dun,
Pomp and Circumstance? That's yes. Not... No, I mean, like, there had to be, like, a video that you guys... Or a song that you play. Like, ours was Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Which is horseshit, because that's not a graduation song. And fucking, Closing Time by Semisonic was an option that they didn't pick. I'm still angry about that.
That's weird. Okay. Fuck. No, I don't know, but it definitely was not Green Day, I Hope You Had the Time of Your Life, because they played that for a music video to encourage us to not drink and drive on Columbine.
That's weird. That's what I mean, but I guess you can make it sad, I guess.
Every year when it was building up to prom, you know, it told stories of these people who died in drunk driving accidents and then ended with over shots of, like, you know, real life footage of people's car accidents on prom nights.
That is,
by the way, that is my impression of every Green Day song ever.
Can you do it one more time? I don't know if it's Green Day or Jerry Lewis.
It sounds like Jerry Lewis.
You're the hype and good riddance, time of your life. Wake me up when September comes, what hype and